This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a musical fable with pizzazz, news of tricentennial celebrations, or an arts adventure with an unusual look at nature, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Everything's coming up roses as Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane closes its 50th anniversary season with the musical Gypsy. The 1959 stage production, with music by Julie Stein and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, is loosely based on the memoirs of the famous striptease artist Gypsy Rose Lee. New Orleans veteran actress Liz Argus stars as Mama Rose. She's here with artistic director Michael McKelvey. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's good to be here.
How did you come to choose Gypsy for the grand finale for your golden anniversary season?
Well, we came up with a theme for the season, which were the iconic women of Broadway, or the Great White Way. And we started off with Annie Oakley and then moved to Tracy Turnblatt from Hairspray. And it just seemed logical to me that I think next to Mame, one of the shows that has two pivotal female characters is Gypsy. So, yeah, with Mama Rose and Gypsy Rose Lee, I just figured that had to be the way we culminated the season.
So at the risk of being corny, How will you entertain us?
Well, all I can bring you is my corny self. And I love the theater. I love musical theater. I believe what's happening when I'm on stage in this kind of cynical world. Maybe there's a reluctance to believe in make-believe, but musical theater is very much about make-believe and goofing around on that stage. And Gypsy does have a lot of heavy stuff going on, but I hope that I can bring some fun and levity in between the heaviness and just be my goofy self.
So what's the storyline? This is a parent that's living her dreams of being an entertainer through her children?
I think that's one way to look at it. I hope that what I communicate is a Rose who really does love her daughters, and she's convinced herself that what she's doing is the best thing for them.
This is a musical fable about Mama Rose and her two daughters, Baby June and Baby Louise. She's trying to make them vaudeville stars or come up with an act that will propel them to Broadway stardom. And the ultimate circuit in Broadway at that time was the Orpheum circuit. So that is kind of the goal, to get them on the Orpheum circuit, which they do briefly. But then after that brush with supposed fame, what happens next? Vaudeville's dying. She still has this desire, at least, to see June be an entertainment success. Where does that drive her? And where does she try to drive June and Louise to an extent? And in doing so, she drives June away. And then she's left with her daughter Louise, who then goes into a career of burlesque.
And becomes Gypsy Rose Lee.
And becomes Gypsy Rose Lee. A heartfelt story in so many ways, and we hope we can just take this audience on a ride with us.
Curtain up. Light the lights. Play it, boys. You either got it or you ain't.
Now, Liz, what attracted you to this complex character?
The show Gypsy and the character Rose is new. She's not like a character I've played before. She's been compared to King Lear by people in the business. And it's very personal for me because I'm a parent. Forgive me, Tessie, but I have a 13-year-old daughter. And that really informs a lot. When Michael McKelvey asked me to play Gypsy, my first reaction was abject terror. But then the more I thought about it and did some research and talking to Michael and Michael schmoozing me, I really started to get excited about the role. The character that Arthur Lawrence wrote is a beautiful woman. with a big heart, and she's a survivor. Maybe she doesn't make all the wisest choices, but she doesn't quit. It inspires me.
What are the themes being explored in the production?
I think the idea of what is fame? Why are we trying to achieve this fame? What is the end result in that? And then what can the aftermath be in this pursuit of it? I think that's the overriding theme or storyline of this show. What is parental love? How do we look at relationships? Not just parents. There is this very complex relationship between Rose and Herbie, who acts as the agent to their act, but also is in love with Rose and her unwillingness to give of herself.
Who else is in the cast?
Playing the role of Gypsy, or Louise, is Meredith Owens, who is newer to New Orleans, but she was last seen, I believe, in Hand of God. Also in Pippin is Catherine at Le Petit. Bob Eads Jr. playing Herbie, a bigger heart you will never find. Then we have Tatum Ludlum. She's playing Dainty June, our star apparent. She comes to us from University of Oklahoma. And then in our juvenile roles, Camille Berkey playing young Louise, and then Ellie Bono as baby June. And then also in the role of Tulsa, who becomes the love interest of June, is Gray Randolph, who also comes to us from the University of Oklahoma.
And what are some of the big numbers in this production?
Oh, my goodness. Everything's Coming Up Roses, Together Wherever We Go, Rose's Turn, which is probably the most dynamic song ever written for a woman on the American stage. Oh, Let Me Entertain You. You will hear numerous times during the show in different transformations.
What would you say is the big takeaway from this musical?
Don't quit.
Don't quit. I think when you finally see the resolution that occurs at the end of the show, this idea about acceptance, this idea about loving one another for where we are at in our lives and what we bring to the table, and just acceptance of one another on those terms. Rose does a lot of pushing of her children. And I think what we see during the show is their willingness to go along with it because they are kids. And then as they grow up and they become teenagers and adults, I'm pulling away from her. And at the end, I think we see this culmination of, Mother, I understand you were doing this for purposes that I didn't really get at the time. But that's who you are, and I know your heart was in the right place. So I will accept you for that, and I will love you for that. I might not agree with the way you handled everything, but I will accept and love. That's what kind of breaks my heart when we get to the end, is that we had to go through this long, 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 long journey for there to be this acceptance of just, this is who you are, this is who we are, and we have to cut each other some slack. And I think that goes along for all of us. Everyone in our society is so quick to judge. And I think if we just take a step back and look at one another and kind of see where everybody's coming from, there might be a lot more acceptance.
There's still some unanswered questions at the end of the show, but that's very much what real life is like. Mm-hmm.
Veteran actress Liz Argus and artistic director Michael McKelvey, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's good to be here.
Be swell. You'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate.
Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane presents Gypsy. Performances run August 3rd through 6th in Dixon Hall on the Tulane University campus. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The historic New Orleans collection is gearing up for a multifaceted celebration of the city's tricentennial anniversary next year. Daniel Hammer is the collection's deputy director, and he's here to reveal the plans. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Diane.
So how will you celebrate 300 years of history?
The collection is going to celebrate by doing some pretty incredible things that are really oriented towards the future of this city.
Let's begin with the exhibits. I believe the first one is New Orleans, the founding era?
That's correct. February 27th will be the opening day. And we're very grateful to Whitney Bank for providing generous sponsorship of this exhibition, and also to the Consul General of France in New Orleans, who has worked hard on our behalf to help us put together a bilingual catalog for this exhibit, which we're very excited to be producing. The exhibition is about New Orleans during the time of its founding, 1718, and it will show what the city was like from the perspective of all of the different types of people who were here at that time, using some really remarkable artifacts that rarely see the light of day and even less frequently are available to be seen on this side of the Atlantic. Much of the exhibit comes from archives in France, objects that are on loan, objects like maps and plans original to that time period showing what New Orleans looked like. Beautiful paintings depicting some of the people who were here at the time. And I think, personally, most remarkably, some really cool Native American artifacts that were transported back to France during the period of New Orleans' founding and teach us about the Native American people who were here in this place before the city was even founded and interacted with the founders of the city and really played a critical role in what the city became in many ways. New Orleans has always been a place that has been formed by so many different people, and this exhibition attempts to showcase that.
Now, this is just one leg of the celebration.
During the period of the exhibition, there's going to be a major symposium, Making New Orleans Home, a tricentennial symposium, features lectures and cultural programming that will be held throughout the city over a period of 4 days and will explore the 300-year history of how New Orleans came to be inhabited by all the diverse and vibrant people that inhabit it today. It's a unique opportunity to gather as a community and reflect on our 300-year history together. Our executive director, Priscilla Lawrence, is the co-chair of the Tricentennial Foundation's Cultural Committee, together with Sybil Morial, and they have put together this program in conjunction with Tulane University, Xavier University, UNO, the Amistad Research Center, and scholars from around the country and around the world. It's a free program open to the entire public, March 8th through March 11th.
And the historic New Orleans collection is also expanding.
Yes, Diane, to the tune of nearly 40,000 square feet, we're going to be opening in 2018 a new exhibition facility at 520 Royal Street, a building that is known as the Signore Brulatour House. It's been many things over its 200-year history. It was built in 1816. It was a retail establishment for importers of wine and other goods from Europe. It has been luxury apartments. It has been tenement housing. It has been home to the Arts and Crafts Club of New Orleans in the early 20th century, a period of time where it played a really central role in the rejuvenation of the French Quarter as a cultural district. And it has been home to a television station. Many people remember it home to WDSU from 1950 until 1996. And so this building will now become home to a museum and cultural institution that will serve New Orleans and help to promote the French Quarter as a place where people can really come to learn about our history and culture and engage with that history and culture. The additional 40,000 square feet that it will be giving us will allow us to welcome so many more visitors into our galleries. And when it opens, it will house a very exciting exhibit called Art of the City, Postmodern to Post-Katrina, which is presented by the Hellis Foundation. It will showcase art that has been produced in New Orleans and tells us about New Orleans from the period of time, approximately 1984, to the present. And this is really kind of a new type of exhibition for us, and I think underscores what the Tricentennial means for the Historic New Orleans Collection. It's not so much about looking to the past just for the sake of commemorating the past, but rather about taking the occasion of an important milestone in our history to look towards the future. So we're doing something new. We're showcasing art in a new space, and this is a kind of step into the future for us. And in a way, I think that's really what the Tricentennial is all about, a turning point in history, recognizing where we've come from, understanding who we are, and hoping that that will help us to go towards a better place in the future.
That's a lot to be excited about. Daniel Hammer, Deputy Director of the Historic New Orleans Collection, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Historic New Orleans Collection's tricentennial celebration events kick off in spring 2018. New Orleans artist and WWNO weekend host Cynthia Scott explores the natural world in a unique exhibit at the Front Gallery, an artist-run exhibition space in the St. Claude Arts District. It's called Unnature And. My colleague Cynthia Scott is here. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane.
Cynthia, let's begin with the title of the exhibit, Unnature And. What was the inspiration?
Well, there's a dividing slash between Unnature and because I have two rooms in the gallery, and I'm approaching the same ideas from sort of two different directions. I'm imagining what it might be like in a future where we've actually succeeded in destroying most of natural nature. Nature is no longer replenishing itself by itself. In other words, we've had to remove it and put it in special places like zoos, where we take our children to go, look at the plants growing, you know, in this little display. And I divided it into two sections where the first room is fanciful, imagined nature. So if you were making whatever flower you wanted to make, you'd make it huge, you'd make it wildly colored, you'd make it in different ways. And I'm representing nature in an unnatural way. So the first room, there's a lot of plastic and resin as materials. Everything is brightly colored. And I have fake flowers that have been impregnated in little resin bubbles. So they look really great, but they're artificial flowers. In the second room, I have actual real nature. I have dried bean pods and dried flowers and pomegranate skins and lemon skins that have also been treated with resin in certain ways. And I have photographs of real nature. And I have an installation of moss-covered forms that look like a photograph I saw once of topiary boxwood in an estate in France that inspired me. And I have a video of a beach walk that's in a sand dune that's all in the gallery. So the first room is imagined, brightly colored, false nature. And the second room is actual nature, but it's been frozen in time so we can see it forever. It's no longer alive.
So you're actually challenging us to figure out what's real and what's not?
Exactly, yes. And how you feel about it.
You're known for large installations and smaller sculptural works. In this exhibit, is there a mixture of the two?
There's very definitely a mixture. And I like to think of it as a group show by one person. The works are very different from each other. I do have some installations. I do have some very small works, and I also have some photography in this show. It's extremely varied. It really does look a bit like a curated group show on a theme, but several artists might have contributed to it.
Why this theme and why now?
I have an underpinning theme, an arc that runs through a lot of my work, which deals with man's impact on the environment. I feel it is perhaps the most vital issue facing us right now, because it doesn't matter what political party you are or how you feel about crime or anything else, if you can't breathe the air, if you don't have fresh water to drink, it doesn't really matter who won the election, you know? And I don't see it as a partisan issue. We all need to live with health. So if you're not healthy, you can't fight your battles. You can't fight crime. You can't improve any of the other problems of society if you are not well.
So let's describe some of the works that we'll see. One that caught my eye, that really popped, was one you call Neoflora.
Yes. I was visiting Los Angeles last summer, and I was fascinated by the plantings around the city, which are xeriscaped, which means they use very low water. They have very attractively landscaped around Los Angeles with various cacti and succulents, and they form this outer space-looking landscape at times, you know, just beautifully shaped plants, very sculptural, and I was taking pictures of them like mad. And I wanted to include them in some way, but I had them up on my computer, and with some of them I thought, what would happen if I reversed the colors, if I flipped them to the negative? And all of a sudden they became totally otherworldly, and as if they were from outer space or some deep lagoon that had never been discovered before. Even more fascinating looking in these crazy colors. So that's why I named them Neoflora.
And it's a digital print on metal?
It is, yes. Very permanent, very archival. It just gives it a little more punch than a regular paper print would have.
And you have a work called Pods, Dry Bean Pods?
Yes, I've used them in a couple of different works. And this was a learning curve for me because I knew I wanted to have them in a translucent form. And I taught myself resin. I've worked with resin in the past without much success. And I just went online and just immersed myself in tutorials. And I found a lot of information on jewelers' sites, you know, jewelry workers who work with resin. They had all these wonderful tips and tricks. So I did lots of experimentation and I tried different forms of mold making. And I took some of the pods and actually encapsulated them in their own little small casing of resin and polished them and treated them the way I would if I were making a piece of jewelry. And that's kind of what they look like hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
And then I have another piece where all of the pods are arranged in a slice of resin. It's about 9 by 13 inches, and it's sort of like if you had a platter of pods in this clear substance, that's what it would look like.
Will we appreciate the natural world and its ephemeral qualities a little more after seeing your exhibit?
I like to hope so. You can enjoy the work on multiple levels. If you want to look at pretty colors and shiny objects and fun, colorful things, I have a gigantic piece that's 18 feet tall that kids would love. It's very brightly colored and fun. It's sort of a Jack and the Beanstalk type plant. And I have little bubbles with bees in them and birds and flowers that are coming out of metal pipes. There's a lot to discover. So you can have fun with it, you can enjoy the colors, you can enjoy the images, or you can think a little deeper about things. It's up to you.
Artist Cynthia Scott, thanks.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Cynthia Scott's Unnature End is now on view through the first week of August at the Front Gallery, 4100 St. Claude Avenue. There is an artist walkthrough on August 6th. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.